Well, thank you very, very much to Victoria and the team for organising this opportunity, for inviting me. And thank you everybody who's joined with your precious time. I thought we could just start by kind of bringing ourselves together for the next half hour, whatever long we've got. Some people will know, I love the phrase from Lama Yeshe, the founder of Universal Education, where he said, let's put the mind where the body is. I don't know about you, but my mind is often in a different place to my body. So it's quite a treat to bring the two together. So I'd just like to invite everybody to sit as comfortably as they can, if possible, with a straight spine so that the energy can flow up and down the spinal cord. And just to take three deep, long breaths. If we want, we can raise our shoulders and drop them during those breaths to let go of any tension that we have in our shoulders. And this is just a way of bringing the mind back to the body in this amazing life-giving breath, which patiently goes in and out for the whole of our living days. And the three long breaths are a way of bringing our attention back to the body. But I'd like to add a lovely thing that I experienced recently from Kelly McGonigal, who's an American teacher who I much respect. And firstly, we want to stop feeling that we are watching the breath. Just try and cut out the middleman and really be with the breath. Do what we can to leave the observer behind. And then imagine that instead of breathing through our nostrils, we are literally breathing through our heart. Just imagine that the breath is coming in and out of the heart in the very, very center of our body. And with every breath, we're opening up to whatever we're going to learn from each other. And we're giving back to each other. Training ourselves so that we can give back to others. Here we are enjoying this once and only moment of breathing together in and out of the heart. So thank you very much for joining me in that, whatever extent you were able to today at this moment. I'm going to start with a quote from His Holiness Dalai Lama, who famously said, my religion is kindness. And it was just over a year, 5 years ago, in January 2016, when I had a light bulb moment and actually decided that that phrase maybe mattered more to me than anything else, and I was going to do what I could to make it my guiding star. So it's just over 5 years now that I've had this real fixation, obsession, really devouring interest in the topic of kindness. I had an interesting experience because I went, somebody I know who works very closely with His Holiness, and I went back to him last month and said, you know, I'm giving this presentation on this title. Can you tell me exactly where the quote comes from? And his first reaction was, well, are we absolutely sure His Holiness said it? And he did a bit of research. He went back to people like Jeffrey Hopkins and Betsy Napper, who edited Kindness, Clarity and Insight, a book that some of you may know. And he talked to them and they did a bit of a search. And we haven't actually come up with it exactly where that quote came from. Kindness was a word that His Holiness was very much using in the late 70s and early 80s, although he did use it last month in a talk with business leaders, which is on his website at the moment, if you want to view it. But everybody was really convinced that he did say that phrase, which is just as well, because it's one of the most best known things, you know, that's out there in his name. I was also suggested that the person who would know was Tenzin Geshe Tetong, who was His Holiness's secretary at that time. And through another friend, we managed to reach Tenzin Geshe. And he said, oh, yes, he definitely said it, but I don't know exactly where or when. So if anybody knows, please let me know. but we proceed in the confidence that this is a phrase that comes from His Holiness. But interestingly enough, kindness doesn't necessarily get that much focused attention as a word. There's been much more recently on compassion. And it can even be difficult to pin down exactly what we mean by kindness. I think it's a very somatic word, so I'd like to invite us back into our bodies for a moment. And firstly, very briefly, just invite you to imagine a moment of unkindness. Maybe when you did something unkind, when somebody did something unkind to you, or when you observed something unkind. So just take a moment, hopefully nothing too extreme, and just observe what happens to your body when you think about unkindness. Does your body relax or does it tense up? If it tenses up, is there any particular part of your body that feels tense and uncomfortable? Now let's take a deep breath, let go of that unwelcome moment of unkindness, and instead, I'd like to invite you to remember a moment of kindness. Perhaps it's something that you did for somebody recently, perhaps it's a kindness that you received, or a kindness that you observed or that you read about. So just sink your mind for a moment into that moment of kindness and observe whether your body feels different in any way. Do your eyes feel different? Does your stomach feel different? Can you pinpoint any change in your body because of thinking about kindness? So, unfortunately, given the size of the group, we haven't really got time to have a good discussion about this. But certainly when I do this exercise, it brings alive this whole thing about kindness for me better than the words would do. I mean, I have some definitions here. Collins Dictionary talks about kindness being the quality of being gentle, caring, and neighborly. The Oxford Dictionary talks about being friendly, generous, and considerate. Merriam-Webster talks about the quality of a state of being kind, and kind being a sympathetic or helpful nature. Interestingly enough, Aristotle defined kindness as helpfulness towards someone in need, not in return for anything, nor for the advantage of the helper himself, but for that of the person helped. So just as the Buddhist definition of real generosity is that you're not looking for anything in return, Aristotle says that's what kindness is as well, which is quite an interesting thing to bear in mind. And then I found recently one of my favourite definitions of kindness, which is from a woman called Penelope Campling, who wrote a book called Intelligent Kindness about kindness in healthcare. And she says, kindness has its roots in the old English word sind, meaning nature, family, lineage, kin. Kindness implies the recognition of being of the same nature as others, being of a kind, in kinship. It implies that people are motivated by that recognition to cooperate, to treat others as members of the family, to be generous and thoughtful. The word can be understood at an individual and at a collective level, and from an emotional, cognitive, or even political point of view. And one of the reasons I like that definition is because I think it begins to give kindness the kind of status that it hasn't had. It's more of a street word, which of course has some advantages for us, but the word that's had the headlights for a long time, or certainly for the last 10 or 20 years, is compassion. And I had the opportunity of asking Thupten Jinpa why he thought compassion was so much more prominent than kindness. And compassion, as you know, kindness, we've just heard, comes from the Anglo-Saxon. Empathy comes from the Greek. And compassion has Latin roots. And very technically, it's actually about responding to the suffering of another person. Which kindness, we could say, isn't. Kindness is more of a being word than a doing word. So compassion, although we think about someone being compassionate, we're really thinking about this response to suffering. And Jinpa said, well, the thing is that we've really been using neuroscience a lot recently, and it's a lot easier to measure compassion than it is to measure kindness. So maybe that's why compassion has really grabbed the limelight, and it's certainly grabbed the academic limelight. There's a new faculty of compassion at UCLA, University of California, Los Angeles. There's various little sort of groups studying compassion. There's a new compassion research institute in the UK. But generally speaking, and unless other people know otherwise, I'll be really interesting to hear, compassion is really at the beginning of its journey into this whole sort of public sphere of what's often called science help. But also into its recognition as a real public force. And I ought to say at this point that everything I'm saying this evening is very much work in progress. I'll be very interested whether other people are interested in joining me on this exploration of kindness. And I'm just sharing things as I've been learning them. And it's definitely not a closed book as yet, and be really interested to hear back from other people. So one possibility is that we could look at a clock face and we could have, say, kindness at the top, the sense of kinship. Then at, say, at 4 o'clock on the clock face, we've got empathy. The kindness moves us towards empathy, this common feeling, which, as we know from the balanced empathy course, can either be cognitive or affective. And then the empathy moves around into compassion. And I would like to think that being compassionate actually refuels our capacity to be kind. So that's just an idea. So, but what's really clear is that people are increasingly talking about kindness. Certainly where I lived, it was a really big word during the pandemic. People had kindness in their shop windows. They had them in their ordinary windows for each other. We saw mainstream shops and businesses using the word kindness on posters in their communications. In the UK, it was chosen as the theme of Mental Health Awareness Week last year. And slightly more internationally, we've got a pop star here called Harry Styles, who some of you may be aware of. And he's made kindness one of his buzzwords. And he released a song and a video in December that got viewed by something like 19 million people in the first 2 weeks. I was very tempted to play it tonight, but I think it would have taken too much time. But anyway, it's just an indication that this is the territory that we're in with kindness. Now, I just wanted to speak very, very briefly about the benefits of kindness, but I don't want to say very much about that because I've got a bibliography for anybody who's interested, which I think the FDCW team will make available. It runs to 4 pages, I'm afraid, because I've just tried to put on it all the books and websites that have been particularly inspiring me recently in different capacities, sort of general kindness, self-help, kindness to oneself, this kind of thing, different areas. But the benefits of kindness probably fall neatly into 3 areas. One of them is physical. And there's one book on this reading list that I really enjoyed called The Rabbit Effect. It doesn't seem to be terribly well known. And it goes back to a 1970s experiment where there were 2 sets of rabbits, I'm sad to say, being experimented on in a laboratory. And they couldn't work out why one set of rabbits was doing so much better than the other, even though they had identical conditions. And in the end, the only variable they could find was that there was a lab assistant with a really kind heart who happened to love rabbits. So she was looking after the rabbits in one of the labs, giving them loads of love and attention within, you know, the constraints of the situation. And those rabbits did so much better than the other set of rabbits. So they then did more experiments and actually really felt that they could say that kindness was making a massive difference to the health and the well-being of those rabbits. And it's the same for human beings. And of course, then that goes into epigenetics and our whole sort of DNA and what we actually pass to other people. And there's all sorts of benefit. I mean, there's all sorts of other benefits posited as well. This is all on the reading list. This is a more sort of pop book. It's a Hay House publication. The Five Side Effects of Kindness talks about kindness being good for our immune system, for our heart health, all this kind of thing. Then mental and psychological benefits of kindness, resilience, lack of fear, ability to experience joy, all those kinds of things. And then we can talk about the societal benefits, that the benefits of kindness for human flourishing. It helps people collaborate, fairness, which is so important. Anybody who knows a book called The Spirit Level, massive sort of data about how unfairness has a negative effect on almost every bit of society. Kindness helps us build social bonds. So I'm not going to speak more about that, because if you're interested, you can research from this bibliography I'm going to share, and you may already know it all anyway yourselves. But one reason I mention it is because if I'm presenting kindness to anybody, I find that it's very important to share data at the beginning. It establishes credibility, particularly with something that's considered a bit of a soft and wishy-washy subject by some people. Okay, so that's a sort of introduction. What Victoria's encouraged me to do is to share two case studies of how my interest in kindness has actually worked out in practice. So one of them she already mentioned was this little centre that my husband and I set up here in Somerset called The Good Heart. We're in a town of 27, 28,000 people. It's got the most active civil society I've ever come across, all kinds of fantastic things happening, but relatively little on the spiritual side. And we just really felt, my husband and I, that we wanted to do something to provide a spiritual resource for people. And one of the things that motivates me is that, you know, we are facing so many challenges at the moment. I mean, even before COVID, there was climate change, which is probably the biggest one of them all. And the prognosis really isn't very good for our society and our civilization. And so when I look at that, I think, what can we do? And I thought, at the least, we need to be kind to each other and help each other be kind and really carry the flag for kindness. So we were particularly fortunate in that a building kind of fell into our hands. So we actually own the premises where this is happening. But I don't think that needs to be that needs to be an obstacle for anybody, because I think you could do this in partnership with an organisation that already exists. And we said that initially it was a one-year pop-up, nice trendy word, gets you off the hook if it doesn't work. And we thought, well, how do we start? And one of the obvious things is to offer food. Everybody needs food. Food brings people together. So we interviewed a few people, and by chance, we came across a Tibetan chef. He's actually a Tibetan refugee, and he cooks the most fabulous plant-based food. I mean, his vegetarian momos are to die for, and they've got a cult following in the town. Interesting enough, we have several tattoo parlors, and the people who do the tattoos particularly like the vegetarian momos. I don't know why, but they do. They queue up for them. So he runs this plant-based cafe sort of during the day and during the early evening. But the arrangement was that we could use the building for anything else the rest of the time. And so what we've said to people in the town is that they're welcome to use our premises. And we've got a big space that seats 30 odd people with sort of projection facilities and all that kind of thing, because my husband's a film buff. And we've also got a little meeting room. And we said anybody could use the place with two conditions. One is that they didn't charge anything, because we wanted the whole thing to be based on generosity. And I should say, actually, that the cafe runs on a pay it forward model. So people don't exactly pay for their food. They pay it forward. And that means that we give out hundreds of free meals every year. We're the sort of place where homeless people will come for a hot meal if they like plant based food. Of course, some of them prefer a kebab or a beef burger. And then the other rule is that it has to have something to do with kindness. So we've hosted Extinction Rebellion. We've hosted Sustainable Froom, which is a transition movement around the environment. We were the place where something called Wellbeing Froom started, which is about making alternative healthcare available for sort of a few dollars in a really affordable way for people. We've hosted exhibitions and raised money for refugees. We're hosting a mental health group at the moment, for the NHS, for our health service, just all kinds of different things. And it's been a real pleasure. We were also very fortunate early on to be offered the opportunity to host a sand mandala. So we had a sand mandala for peace, and we had about 150 people come and see that during the day. And we've had a few sponsors, and so we gave everybody a free meal on Kindness Day in 2019. And this year at Christmas, we went into lockdown just before Christmas. So we did a sort of open morning for anybody who was on their own on Zoom in Christmas. And we've also run something called Heart Space since April, every weekday, which is a sort of half hour of gentle sort of meditation and mindfulness for anybody who wishes. And that's got quite a devoted following. And my idea about it now is that maybe what we would do is aim towards having a festival of kindness for a week next year in the town. And I'm recruiting people who are interested in doing that. And hopefully we can get a small grant to do that. And then use that as a launching pad for reaching out to new audiences. So very interested in bringing the sea learning into the schools in the local area. So I've got somebody who's got very good links with local schools, who's interested in getting involved, and all sorts of different things like that. So the building becomes a focus. And what we've discovered after sort of 2.5 years is that it's sort of entered the vocabulary in the town. We're very well supported by the local newspaper, and you hear people saying things like, oh, I'll meet you at the Good Heart. I'll go down the Good Heart. And that's very pleasing. And hopefully, you know, will be a real resource for the town in the years ahead. And what I want to do is start trying to give it away, so that we create a little sort of management group of people with links into different communities in the town who together will plan and run this festival. I'd really like to get our town council, who are very open-minded, to talk about how we can build kindness into all the different things that go on here and into the political policy of the town. We've got our own radio station in the town, and I've already been asked whether I would run a radio program about kindness, which I'm sort of treading water on at the moment, because I know if I get involved in that, it'll stop me doing other things. So that's just an example of how in a local area you can get people thinking and talking more about kindness. So the other thing I wanted to share, and this is something very close to my heart, in 2017-2018 I was invited to help facilitate a set of workshops around the UK for stressed doctors. I was the person who kind of welcomed people, did the icebreaker, kind of helped everybody calm down. They were then went off into sort of different groups, which I didn't run. And then I sort of did the wrap up at the end of the day, created the mood. I helped design them. And it was a really rewarding thing to do. We did them all over the country. And it just gave me a real feel for the incredible problems that doctors and nurses are facing. I don't know if you know, but there's a really bad history of stress in the medical profession at the moment. I think on average, every day a doctor commits suicide successfully in the States. We've got bad suicide levels here. And of course, the pandemic's only made the whole thing worse. But before the pandemic, one of the people who had been on one of my courses came back to me and said, well, would you be interested in running a day for us? And I said, well, I'm not doing that particular work at the moment, but this was quite scary. I took a deep breath and I said, but I'm particularly interested in kindness. Would you be interested in a day on kindness in the health service? And to my amazement, she came back the same day. It turned out that I wasn't the person she thought I was. She thought I was a retired doctor who'd been to medical college with one of her friends. So it was a bit of a shock in the morning of the course when she discovered I wasn't that person. But by then there was nothing to be done. So karma was obviously in my favour at that moment. It was quite scary meeting someone at sort of 7:30 in the morning when you're about to be run a course and be told you weren't the person they were expecting. So I don't know if anyone else has had that experience. Anyway, just steals my determination. So what I did for this day was I had the four sections of the day classically. So the first one was really establishing credibility, talking about the importance of kindness. And luckily in this country and also in the States, in the last 5 years, there've been a few academic studies of how doctors looking after themselves doctors and nurses are kind to themselves, they're much more likely to be kind to their patients. and that if they look after themselves well, then the patients will actually have better health outcomes. So if anyone's interested, I've got handled on most of the key pieces of research. I've met some of the researchers. And so you present that to establish your credibility as somebody who actually isn't a doctor themselves. Then I divided the rest of the three sessions into three very clear topics. One about was kindness to yourself. One was about kindness to your colleagues and your patients. And the third one was about kindness in the system. So kindness to yourself, I introduced some very basic self-compassion methodologies and ideas. In my experience, very few doctors, admittedly this was a year and a half ago, but very, very few doctors have actually heard the phrase self-compassion. In the UK, they're certainly not used to the work of Kristin Neff or Christopher Germer and this kind of thing. So it's really interesting to present that to them. And massive topic is, why is this such an obstacle for doctors? And there's actually a lot of reasons. They've actually been identified in research, which is that going through medical school is like boot camp, that doctors are encouraged to think of themselves as superheroes. There's all kind of mental processes at work, which mean that they bury their own needs because they're so busy responding to the needs of others. So this is actually a very satisfying thing to unpack. And once you get people thinking about and talking about it, it tends to run very easily and freely. Then after lunch was a session on kindness to patients and colleagues. And here I borrowed from the wonderful Craig Mackey, who I noticed is with us today, which is great. Thank you, Craig. And I got them talking to plants. And anyone who's done 16 guidelines knows that exercise. It's a great one after lunch because people come back into the room and you've got your tables with plants on them. Of course, I was a little bit nervous. I was working with GP trainers. So they're senior doctors who train other doctors, which of course was to my advantage because it's very difficult to get busy people to attend a course. But these trainers have to attend courses. So it was part of their professional, accreditation. So anyway, I got them talking to plants. I got exactly the same laughs that you had with any other group. And always with these groups, doctors are very bright. So you have to give them loads of space to be themselves. But they also tend to be very funny because they have this black humour. But what interested me is that they immediately started transferring the exercise to their own experience. I didn't have to make the link. So just as they'd finished the third bit, they were talking about how they talk to their patients and how they talk to each other. So the exercise totally, totally took off. And then in the last quarter of the day, I had them sitting down in groups where they worked together, discussing how they could bring more kindness into their systems. And I think we did a kind of a brainstorm to kick it off with post-its or whatever, to get it going as a whole group. And then people divided up. And you could see that people were really knuckling down and coming out with some really positive, specific interventions that they could do in their surgeries. You know, whether it's giving people more time to have tea together, having more staff events, social time, whether how they change their reception practices so that they can be kinder to people who need an appointment, everything like that. And at the end of the day, I did feedback. It was an experiment, but I'd recommend this to anybody. Doctors have to fill in forms all the time. I really didn't want to ask them to fill in any more. So what I did was pass around my iPhone and simply ask them to record a comment into my iPhone if they wanted to. And I got some beautiful feedback. One of the pieces I'll really remember is from an older doctor. And he said, frankly, I was just going to stay for an hour or so to be polite. But I would have stayed the whole evening. And what you've done today has completely changed my attitude to how I work, which was obviously really, really lovely. And particularly lovely because kindness is what gets people into the medical profession, by and large. And then it gets buried, it doesn't get fed, it doesn't get nurtured. And so you can present the whole day in the way of bringing out and helping people reconnect with the kindness that they've already got. And there won't be time to speak about this now, but depending on how this year unfolds, I'm really interested in developing a whole platform and initiative called Kindness in Healthcare, which would offer a mixture of kindness refreshers, which would be 1 hour sessions on Zoom or face to face, or 1 day sessions like that one there. Kindness spas, where you would get particularly exhausted healthcare professionals away for a few days in a retreat situation where you would pamper them, but also give them some of the tools and the insights that we are so blessed to be connected with in UE. And then thirdly, you could offer kindness audits, where you would go into a surgery or potentially even a hospital and work with the staff to identify how you could bring more kindness into the way that that particular organization functions. So anyway, that's the idea in my mind at the moment for later in the year. So I just wanted to say a couple of things about what I've learned about working with kindness in this way. And I should say actually that that day was very well received. They sent me flowers and chocolates afterwards. I was really, as well as paying me, which was quite extraordinary. And they passed my name on, and I was invited to another one, which didn't happen because of COVID. But I did do an hour about kindness for our local surgery last summer. And then I was invited to do one for some other doctors a few weeks ago. And then from that, I've been invited to be the keynote speaker for some another set of doctors next year. So I have no website, I have no business card, I have no, you know, formal status of any kind, but simply from the way this is going, I can tell that actually there really is some potential here. So just a few things that I've learned. It's really important to celebrate the kindness that already exists, to be appreciative of all the kindness in the room, to be appreciative of all the kindness in the town, to help people connect with the fact that they've already got that this within themselves. And again, this will be familiar to anybody who's done 16 guidelines work. And, you know, with a good heart, if we do this festival, we'll also celebrate, invite other organisations in the town to come and celebrate the kindness that they do. Of course, it's important to embody kindness during the course itself, to make the whole thing an experience of kindness. But it's really important to go deeper than transactional kindness. I've heard it called confetti kindness. You know, online, random acts of kindness, this kind of thing. It's quite easy for kindness to be brought down to helping someone across the road or carrying their shopping or being polite in the supermarket. And I think we need to have a transition from a kind act to a kind person. We need to bring it right back from doing to being. We also need to find the edge, find those moments where we can't be kind. And I had experience of this a few months ago because I was talking to two wonderful people who are running a whole sort of network of health connectors, social prescribing, if you're familiar with that in this area. And I could tell that, you know, I mentioned kindness and they slightly glazed over. They're unbelievably kind. Their whole work is about kindness. What have we got to share and talk about? But then I talked about how can we be more kind to the people we dislike? How can we be kind on our bad days? How can we be kind when we're feeling overwhelmed? And I find that's a way in for people. You know, people say, oh, yeah, there's definitely people I can't be kind to. And of course, that's, again, where the whole sort of UE training about equanimity comes in. Kindness is naturally somatic. It always has a physical dimension. It always involves a softening of some kind, which hopefully you've got a very, very slight taste of in that lightning sort of moment we had at the beginning of the session. And then the other thing is that the very best starting point is kindness to yourself. And some of the people who are the most busy being kind in society really haven't brought it back to themselves. And kindness to oneself is the antidote to being busy in that kind of a way and becoming burnt out and not nourishing oneself and not being able to go deeper and not being able to listen. And I say all these things from personal experience because I've been there. So for me, this emphasis on kindness to myself has been absolutely transformational. Okay, 5 minutes over, Victoria. I'm sorry.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I find that so inspiring, so practical, and just so many ideas. And I've just taken loads of notes. I have questions, but I'm sure lots of other people do too. So if you have a question, please raise your hand and Angela will unmute you.
Yeah, Craig's got his hand up.
Okay.
I have a question. Can you talk about connectivity and the importance of connectivity in the examples? And it's just a word that we used a couple times, making connection, and it really resonated with the idea of kinship and interconnectivity. It's just asking for more comment or thoughts on the importance, right, connectivity.
Yeah. Yeah. I think connectivity is right at the heart of kindness. And so interconnectedness, that great UE theme, is absolutely critical here, and also equanimity. And, you know, when we think about kindness, we think immediately maybe of a mother and her child, or hopefully, or either parent, any caregiver and their child. And that's what you can take, go back to that experience of kindness. But where we get stretched, as I mentioned, is being kind to the people we don't get on with so well, the people we don't feel close with. So I think it really, really goes hand in hand with building this sense of connectivity with others. And of course, we can also make that reciprocal and talk about how we want to extend our circles of kindness beyond, beyond simply the people that we're naturally with. I mean, and the pandemic gives us an unbelievable sort of subject matter for that. I mean, I like threes, and I often talk about kindness in terms of threes. So there's the kindness to self, kindness to patients and colleagues, kindness in the system that I've talked about with doctors. We had an event in the UK last November, a wonderful event for one day called Kindfest. And there they talked about kindness to self, kindness to other human beings, and kindness to the environment. There's another three. And then, of course, another one which I often build in is kindness with your thoughts, kindness with your words, and kindness with your actions. So, but that's taking it a little bit away from the theme of connectivity. I'd love to explore this more, Craig, when if we could make a time to do that, and anyone else who wants to, because I think it's absolutely at the heart of it. And I think probably more so at the heart of kindness than it is at the heart of compassion, to be honest. So is that just a smidgen?
Thank you.
A smidgen. I can see Rachel, were you putting your hand up? Hey there.
Hi, Alison. It's so lovely to be here with you and everyone else. Sorry, I was a little late. I'm in the middle of my teaching day. I'm teaching middle school. When you mentioned going deeper than confetti kindness and taking it from a kind act into a kind person, I thought, but isn't that so dangerous? Isn't that I'm a kind person, and it becomes something less deep because of that. It becomes some sort of a label and also an area of pitfalls where if I'm not kind, then I'm not a kind person, and therefore it lends itself to all kinds of other difficult mental states. And I just wondered if you had thought it through more than I have and what your thoughts were.
I think that's a really, really interesting question. My comment came out of a concern that kindness can become a little bit tick box. You may be aware there's quite a few calendars around at the moment. Greater Good do a monthly calendar, Action for Happiness do monthly calendars. I'm sure there are others as well. And they'll give you a suggestion of something you can do each day, something kind you can do. I mean, there's a really Kind Spring, one of Nip and Mater's organizations, which is on my bibliography, also has a sort of 21-day kindness program. So my concern is that we don't get stuck in just doing those things. And I think there's a danger in simply rewarding children for doing something externally that's kind, but that doesn't actually come from deep within themselves. You know, just doing something that gets noticed, that gets rewarded, that ticks that box. I think in terms of exploring whether you're a kind person, of course, has dangers, just like exploring whether you're a generous person or how you cultivate kindness and generosity within yourself. And the whole thing will be about the subtlety with which that's done. You know, and I think if particularly if children can connect with their natural kindness, which, you know, as we all know, is so powerful in them. You know, His Holiness recently has been very clear where he just says, well, you know, children are kind until they go to school, and then they lose that. Well, I'm sure not, you know, in your classes and not in places like Tara Redwood School, but that's so often the case. To gain some confidence in the natural kindness that's there in their hearts, to me, would be a very important thing, you know, just as I keep coming back to Buddha nature in these difficult times, that we all have the capacity to live in a different way and to let our light shine, as it were. So, I mean, again, I think it's a question we haven't got enough time to really go into in depth. But does that give you a few things to think about?
Sure. I guess it triggers more questions in me. Yes. As well. Of course, my classrooms are public school classrooms. It's not like Tara Redwood school, but and middle school on top of that. So I don't have much control over my kids' kindness factors, but I try. I guess it's just like we can come at it from either way. I mean, sometimes we're talking about inspiring people to act on their ideas, like you have the idea to help someone, but you don't actually go out and do it. And so how do you get to that point? Well, you have to start somewhere. So I don't know if maybe it's like you're saying, the subtlety or the depth that you're bringing to it, how you get there is less of an issue as to how far you can actually get.
Yeah. I mean, I should say as well that I'm, you know, schools and children is not my area. So I'm really probably not very well qualified to speak about this. But there are some kindness curriculums around. Richard Davidson's got one. There's also one, a free one in the UK that you can get. And there's, which again is on my bibliography, and I'm sure there's more besides. And it would be interesting to see how they approach this, you know, and maybe through identifying examples of kindness in the classroom and building around that so that it becomes something very practical and very tangible for the children. But I mean, when we divide into groups, I don't know when you want to do that, Victoria, because I can see there's more questions. That might give you a little bit more of an opportunity to discuss this.
I think Laurie's got a question. Do we want to go to Laurie?
Can I just say that Vanessa Tenzin Choki raised her hand before? I don't know if she still wants to ask.
Sorry. Okay, Vanessa Tenzin Choki first.
Hi, Alison.
Hi there.
Talking to you in London right after your epiphany about kindness, so it's great to go back 5 years later.
You probably didn't get a word in edgeways.
No, it was so great, very inspiring. I just wanted to comment before, because there was the comment about connection, and I remember listening to Roshi Joan Halifax and Sharon Salzberg doing a teaching on kindness, which was amazing, and they were both saying, I can't remember which said which, but one of them said they like to translate metta as friendliness. And one said, I think it was Sharon said, I like to just translate it as connection. So I thought that was really cool that they both said like this quality of friendliness and connection. So I just wanted to comment because that came up, like how does connection fit in there? Because I've kind of used that when I've explained, you know, loving kindness practice in Buddhism and just kind of fleshing it out a little bit more with those two words as well. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, and of course, Sharon Salzberg is an absolute master on this subject, if anybody's not aware. I didn't put her on the reading list because it wasn't so specific for, you know, what I'm talking about, but her work on loving kindness, her book on loving kindness, all fantastic.
Yeah, I just thank you for all of this. And I was particularly interested in your comments about the three sort of levels of the applications of kindness, and especially the systemic level. And I know this is work that you're just embarking on, but I wondered if you've given thought to what kind of diagnostics you can offer people who are grappling with the lack of kindness on a systemic level, whether it's within their own institutions, their schools, their hospitals, prisons, wherever, you know, how does somebody just begin to identify, you know, the lack of kindness and opportunities to build kindness into the system itself.
I, as you said, I'm at an early stage with this, and I don't have any methodologies, and particularly with organizations, I would seek to work in partnership, you know, with people who've been doing that more recently. But there certainly is research happening, because there was both in the States and in the UK, there were major pieces of research that came out in 2019. They're not on the bibliography if anybody's interested looking at systems. And there's also a lovely book called Intelligent Kindness, written by the woman actually who gave us this quote, well, co-wrote, a woman called Penelope Campling. And that's about how to bring intelligent kindness into the healthcare system. So people are definitely beginning to look at this. There's a book called Kindness in Leadership, although I haven't actually read that myself. And I know Rasmus as well with the Potential Project. I mean, he's using the word compassion. But one of the things that's confusing is that these words are so used so interchangeably. I got very excited because Action for Happiness, which is a lovely organization if you don't know it, brought out something called the Kindness Report in December 2019. And I thought, fantastic. And then the whole thing was about compassion. And it was using compassion metrics and compassion research. So I actually rang up the director who I know and talked to him about this and said it's really different. We do have that's another lead, Robin. There's an organisation called the Carnegie Foundation in Scotland. And for the last 3 or 4 years, they've made kindness one of their main focuses. And they're actually working with the Scottish government. And they've got quite a few metrics for systemic kindness. So if anybody wants to brainstorm Carnegie Foundation, you'll find a whole load of stuff, and they're really influencing at a very high level. So
great, thank you so much.
We also have an organisation in the UK called Compassion in Politics. That's relatively new. It's cross-party. It's got some very senior politicians involved, and they're running all kinds of events and looking at how they could introduce a compassion measurement for new legislation. So any new legislation in this country would actually be tested against how compassionate it is. And again, I think they're using compassion and kindness fairly interchangeably. They've just set up something, a sort of institution for studying compassion in the UK. Laurie, we get to you.
Sorry about that. I just knew it was going to happen and the doorbell rang. Oh, no, I'm really enjoying this. I think that, you know, like the separation, the connection and the separation between kindness and compassion. But I would love to explore more of that on the connection and the connectivity. Because I know in talks here, and I was looking at possibly doing some work with listening skills and with doctors, right? And
oh, right.
Like, so that patients are actually heard.
Yep.
And I was building it on that sense of connection and connectivity and kindness based on rapport, like building that rapport. And I think listening to this, so I'd love to work with you and Craig and whoever else wants to, because I think it's developing how you develop that rapport with the foundation of kindness, just permeating it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then there's the big problem of who do you reach and how do you reach? Because doctors are of all shapes and sizes. So there's a spectrum at the moment, my observation is. And there's a lot of organisations rising up in the UK to respond to the trauma that doctors are going through. And I imagine it'll be the same in other parts of the world. So this is going to be a big field. And one of the things that motivates me is wanting to bring something of real quality to that field. Because, you know, there's actually healthcare professionals dropping out of medicine, looking for something else to do. You know, and I remember, I've never mentioned the name, but someone who told me a year or two ago that she had been a doctor and now she was teaching doctors mindfulness. And I said, oh, you know, what kind of mindfulness? I said, do you have a daily practice? And she said, well, not every day, but I try to be mindful while I'm doing the washing up. And I thought, you know, that's not quite how I would approach the topic. So, but anyway, so you've got the people, the doctors who are really, really stressed and really in trauma, you know, and are going to need some really intense help around PTSD and that kind of thing. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you've got doctors who actually don't accept or realize or admit that they've got any of these difficulties. And they're often the older school doctors who have positions and a lot of power. So the question is, how do you reach that group? Sometimes they're older males, I don't want to generalize, but, and then the sort of things that are happening in this country, there's a lovely group called the Joyful Doctor, but the constituency they attract is very much female doctors in the middle of their career. You know, so part of this for me would be, well, which doctors can you reach and how? You know, and do you start with the easier to reach and move in, and how do you present it to people who are very resistant to it? And whether you can get in on professional accreditation, or, you know, and being able to produce some quantitative data which actually gives you credibility at the beginning of it and that sort of thing. I'd be really interested to discuss more. I think it would be a wonderful, thing to do.
They actually didn't take me up on it because they thought the audience probably wouldn't participate. They already have a workshop on communication, but I was saying this is more than communication. So, I think, getting it in there I think even with other groups, even just like first line caregivers, anybody.
My experience is that the nursing profession has actually been looking at these things for a lot longer. And in the UK, we have one wonderful nurse turned university professor who's writing and working on this topic at one of our universities. But I think we have to be pragmatic. You know, who do we know? Where can we see an opening? And what is the best way through that opening? I mean, one of my ideas is to actually set up a series of 1-hour events with narrative themes. And you would take themes that doctors are experiencing, like moral injury, imposter syndrome, trouble with boundaries, that kind of thing. And then take stories from real life and get them discussing those stories. So when they hear a story and they relate to it, then something opens up. I mean, the session I did a few weeks ago with some doctors was on Zoom, and they run regular sessions every few weeks. They had never before had a breakout room. They were just used to being lectured with PowerPoint, which is one reason I didn't do PowerPoint this evening. And actually, I had enormous trouble sharing my material, because once they started talking, once they got into it, you couldn't stop. And that's my feeling with your idea. You know, if you can find a way in, then it could be really successful. So good luck with that.
Should we break into discussion groups now, Alison, or...? Have you got
that's what we planned, although we're about 20 minutes behind schedule on that.
No, that's okay. I think we can go into groups maybe for 10 minutes and discuss the questions you've come up with, and then there's enough time to come back and report in.
I had 3 questions, and maybe people can decide which of them they want to discuss. One of them was just, what does kindness mean to you? But we've discussed that quite a bit in the larger group. The second one was, are there ways that you could be more kind to yourself? And the third one might be the most appropriate this evening, which is, are the ways that you personally can become an ambassador of kindness? So, you know, have I shared things this evening that inspire you either to set up a whole new program like Laurie was talking about, or to delve deeper into the topic of kindness, or to bring kindness into work that you're already doing, which Rachel was looking at, like that. So I think of all the questions, probably, you know, how could you be an ambassador of kindness? How would you like to take any of this forward? Would be my number one question.
Okay, so let's go into our groups for 10 minutes, and then we can rejoin. Okay. Angela's going to put us in our groups now. Thank you. Okay, welcome back, everyone. I think, Sharon, you were the first group back. Is there somebody from your group who wants to share a few thoughts about what you discussed?
Yeah, so I took notes. So there was myself and Robin. I'm trying to say everybody. Drokar was on my team. Robin is it Venerable Shannon? Barb Shannon?
Barbara.
Just Barbara, okay. I didn't want to be disrespectful. Okay. So a few things came up, and Robin was talking about climate change and that there's not a lot of like inner development, you know, personal inner development, and that's needed. And she talked about burnout for activists and introducing kindness, with them and empathy. And also she touched on that finding the edge, Allison, when you talked about finding that edge. So just recognizing that. And then Barbara was talking about the Liberation Project, and she actually sent out Christmas cards, and the focus was on kindness. So that was quite cool. And she said she just went self and others, you know, just self and others. And another comment was on that sometimes when we're giving, if we're giving to a homeless person, if it's just the physicality of like just handing money, then it has to be deeper than that. And I had talked about how 20 years in the army, I'm not taught to be kind. And then what happens is we're put in a situation where we need it. So, you know, when I lost my husband to ALS, I lost my daughter to cancer, I had armored up and like my heart was locked, you know, and it actually was the self-compassion meditation that really helped me transform. And I couldn't even... I couldn't even bring compassion to myself. I had to practice with somebody that represents me, a mom and a spouse, and give them compassion and kindness. And then I was able to bring that person closer so that I could actually do it to myself. Wow. And I find that the self-compassion piece is like the greatest healer when you're really hurting and you're blaming yourself. And then unfortunately, Jalkar, we didn't get to you. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. I really resonate with self-compassion, what you shared there. I think that's completely right on. I remember actually Jinpa talking about that when I did CCC training with him, or we went to a forum, and he spoke about how in the West, people are very unfamiliar with this idea of being compassionate to themselves. It's like, it's always for other people. And when you say it's yourself, it's like, what? Whoa, they can't do it. So I think that's a real growth area for us. But can we hear from another group now?
Can I nominate Denise to...
Yeah.
I'm going to jump in because I'm teaching a lesson in 10 minutes, but our group, we mostly talked about everyday kindness to other people because everyone is suffering. And we also talked some about, I wanted to share an idea that I shared in another group about, even when we're talking about the piece of self-kindness, there's connection there, because when Kristen Neff talks about self-compassion, she talks about three components. And one of those is realizing that our suffering actually helps us highlight our common humanity. It connects us to others as opposed to making us feel like we're the only one bearing this burden. So I think we have a connection piece even in the self piece. Thank you for everything. This is so rich, Allison.
Thank you, Denise, and thanks for making that point, because it's one of the most powerful parts of her methodology as far as I'm concerned.
Can we hear from another group now? Another spokesperson, Rachel, are you raising your hand? Yeah.
So I was with Tiziana and Hillary and Martha, and the beginning was almost a consensus that we have to be kind and be the example or the model, and how that is both kindness to self and kindness to others, how that brings out kindness in others, the contagion that is, like that. So that was a major component. And then coming back to acting on the thoughts. And so it was also kind of highlighted the sort of like sometimes kindness can be the solution to all the trouble that you're experiencing. Like if it's so overwhelming, you can mm-hmm. kind of simplify it by saying, well, is it kind or not? But then it's not really simple. That there needs to be that motivation of kindness. Not even the question of whether the act is an act of kindness or not an act of kindness, but is there harshness involved in that? Even if it's an act of kindness, is there an element of harshness in that act of kindness? So it's more, somehow comes down to being kind or being that. And then there was an element that I thought should be highlighted, that there's an element of practicing kindness, that we don't get it the first time around. Necessarily, like especially if it's either for ourselves, sort of like Sharon was talking about, or like with parents or
some pattern that we've already got in our lives, we might not get to the perfect kindness the first time. We might have to practice it and have patience with ourselves.
Definitely.
Reinforce it.
Absolutely, in my experience. I think Jinpa describes kindness as a muscle. And some of the other people I've been reading discuss, talk about kindness as a process. You know, it's not a, yeah. So.
Shall we hear from another group now? Is there someone who hasn't spoken? One of the groups? Jane.
There we go. Great. Thank you.
People hey, Jane.
Hi there, Alison. Gorgeous to see you. Thanks for this. People talked about the reaching out to neighbours in a way they've never had before and the simple acts. But a really important discussion came from Eve. Thank you so much. Eve and I both got up very early for this, so that was very kind of her to join us for this. She's been noticing that COVID has brought out not just the angels, but also the demons, and that there have been some very toxic responses and punishing attitudes. And kindness is an antidote to cope with that. It's a buffer, knowing that there's a balance instead of feeling overwhelmed by the toxicity. Mm-hmm. Rather than doing kindness transactionally, rather than being kind, it sort of doesn't matter. It almost doesn't matter what the situation is. When people are pushing all of our buttons, that's when kindness has its most strengthening power, in a way. There's a lot of toxicity and defensiveness, and so we really need antidotes and connections like this where we can talk at a level with like-minded people to give us the strength to deal with that. I know this is personally an issue. My daughter is a Trump supporter, and it's just exhausting. And the conspiracy theorist. And so this has been very healing for me to be here this morning. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is there any other group that we've not heard from yet? Laurie is raising her hand.
I can jump in, and I was meeting with Ceci and Lorna, so please jump in if I misrepresent anything. But a couple of points that just in addition to what has been said is, like, one of the things we did say is that we really do need to learn how to be kind to ourselves in order to be authentically kind to others. Yeah. And also that sometimes, you know, perhaps more in the Western world, like some groups have built a wall of protection around themselves, sometimes against kindness and meanness. Like it's hard to sometimes permeate because there's a trust sometimes that needs to be built to, and maybe there's that connection again, right? Get the rapport, get the trust before they can accept kindness and even learn kindness for themselves, which kind of led also to kindness may mean different things to different people in different age groups. Like Ceci's saying, like, she's working with teenagers and kids, and some of them are, you know, get kindness and then they become 13, 14, and then who knows? Like kindness to some kids might mean I'm kind when I don't haul off and hit my sister. Or, you know, so sometimes I think we have to understand what kindness means to different people. So I think, unless Ceci and Lorna have something else to add, I think that kind of summed it up.
Thank you. I think we've heard from all the groups now. Is that right? Okay, we've reached the end of our session. It's been a really rich session. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'd like to thank from my heart the wonderful Alison Murdoch, so inspiring.
The wonderful Victoria. Thank you for thanking me. Victoria, can I say two things, just two practical things?
Sure.
One is that unless things change, which of course things do change, I'm going to carry on chewing kindness, thinking about kindness, exploring how to work with kindness. If anybody is interested in staying in contact about this, then please do. You know, I'm very busy at the moment doing something else for FDCW, but, you know, hoping particularly the kindness in healthcare thing maybe to be majoring on this from the early summer. So if this does interest you, please do stay in touch about it. And then the other thing is that I was going to leave you with another profound quote from His Holiness, because, I mean, I have to say we could have talked the whole evening about what he means by saying kindness is my religion, not compassion is my religion. And the quote I wanted to leave people with was, he said, whenever possible, be kind. It is always possible.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Okay, so thank you very much, Alison, for everything you've offered today. Absolutely wonderful. And I'd just like to close with a dedication. So if we just take a moment to center ourselves. And come into a heart space. And start with feeling of kindness towards oneself. And then sending that kindness to every single person on this call we shared this evening. Really connecting with their heart, wishing them to be happy, peaceful. And then seeing all the kindness in our hearts radiating out to our family and friends, our loved ones. And seeing that go out throughout the whole of this world, to every single being. And then breathing it back in. And making a determination to be an ambassador for kindness in whichever way we can be. Thank you so much, everyone. Thanks for participating and making this possible. See you next time. Thanks, Alison.